The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Okay, let's start off with an interesting article in the National Interest, The Tractor War. There's a picture of a big John Deere tractor pulling a big wagon, looks like a grain wagon. If you buy a machine, be it a smartphone or a combine, you should be able to fix it, right? Big Tech says no. Ordinary Joe say yes. Witness the biggest battle in the right to repair movement being fought across farms in America. And there's a picture of a gentleman with lightly graying hair wearing a big leather jacket with a snap-on, with a jacket that says snap-on. It's got looks like a kind of a Western kind of a shirt and blue jeans. Looks kind of rugged, probably in his 50s. We're a nation of tinkerers, says right to repair advocate Kevin Kinney, and he's sitting inside a big wheel. It's Husker Harvest Days, Nebraska's biggest agricultural trade show, and Kevin Kinney is working the pavilions. The engineer, innovator, and inveterate manure stirrer is trying to be discreet. He has allies here among the sellers and auctioneers and used tractors and aftermarket parts, not to mention among the farmers and mechanics, but enemies lurk everywhere. Kinney is leading a grassroots campaign in the heart of the heartland to restore a fundamental right most people don't realize they've lost, the right to repair their own farm equipment. By sheer dint of personal passion, he's taking on John Deere and the other global equipment manufacturers in a bid to preserve the mechanical skills on the American farm. And a slight aside on this, one of the articles we're going to read in Consumer Reports next concerns doing your own maintenance on your car. Big tractors say farmers have no right to access the copyrighted software that controls every facet of today's equipment, or even to repair their own machines. That is the exclusive domain of authorized dealerships. Kinney says the software barriers create corporate monopolies and destroy the agrarian ethos of resiliency and self-reliance. The spirit of the right to repair is the birthright we all share as a hot-rodding nation, he says. Tall and trim at 57, called his age, didn't I? With gray-flecked hair and a passing resemblance to a corn-fed George Clooney, very accurate, Kinney has picked up significant pushback against the computerization of U.S. agriculture. At stake for Deere & Company and other big manufacturers is the free rein they've had as they have modernized farming with data and software. The transformation has helped U.S. farmers increase productivity, but at the cost of a steady shift in operational control from farmer to machine. One of the world's oldest and most hands-on occupations has literally become a hands-off one. Anything a farmer does on modern tractor, beginning with opening the cab door, generates a message captured by its main onboard computer. This uploads the signal to the cloud via a cellular transmitter, which in many Deere models is located beneath the driver's seat. These machines have been meticulously programmed and tested to minimize hazards and maximize productivity, Deere says. And frankly, it's too complicated for farmers or for anyone who doesn't know the ins and outs of programming. One tweak could cascade throughout an entire software system and lead to unintended consequences, says Julian Sanchez, Deere's Director of Emerging Technology. It doesn't take much imagination to envision a coding mistake by a hacker or even a well-intended farmer or mechanic that sends a 500-horsepower combine careening into a farmhouse or through a clutch of workers eating lunch in the fields. For a decade, the right to repair battle cry has rattled around the rarefied circles of digital rights activists, technical libertarians, and hands-on repair geeks. Now, largely because of Kinney's persistence, it's tugging at the farm belt. Why, activists ask, should a buyer of an espresso machine or a laser printer have to get replacement pods and cartridges from the original manufacturer? Who is Apple Incorporated to dictate that its only certified parts can be used to repair a broken iPhone screen? What gives Deere the right to insist, as it did in a 2015 filing with the U.S. Copyright Office, that its customers, who pay as much as $800,000 for a piece of farm equipment, don't own the machine's software and merely receive an implied license to operate the vehicle? If it has a chip in it, it's going to get monopolized, says Gay Gordon Byrne, executive director of the Repair Association, which promotes the repair and reuse of electronics. Gordon Byrne has helped Kinney set a clear goal, a law modeled on the landmark Massachusetts statute passed in 2012, that required automakers to offer car owners and independent mechanics the same diagnostic and repair software they provide their own dealers. After it passed, automakers relented and made all the repair tools available nationwide. That's what Kenny demands for farm equipment. At Husker Harvest Days, an ag industry blowout held every September in Grand Island, Nebraska, Kenny moves warily. After lunch, he drops by to see Kenny Rolofsson of Abilene Machine LLC, a five-state retailer of used equipment and spare parts in Abilene, Kansas. Rolofsson's company is instrumental in keeping older tractors in the field, an essential service for smaller farmers on smart, tight budgets. But he says software barriers in newer machines are killing his incentive to make and sell parts. I've stopped developing parts for machines built after 2010 because I know my customers can't work on them without software, he says. Only giant corporate farms can afford newer equipment. For the small guy, it's not economical feasible. And the next is a picture of a balding man, gentleman, looks like he's probably in his 40s, and his mechanic, Jeremy Davis, is giving a basic manual from a John Deere is impossible. He's standing in front of a big, huge tractor. American farmers have a familiar saying to describe their loyalty to Deere, an attachment stretching back generations in many families. We bleed green. Deere's green and yellow farm vehicles dominate the world's $68 billion market for agriculture equipment, accounting for more than half of all farm machinery sales in the U.S. and over a third of equipment revenue worldwide. The company says the world needs digitized farming to feed the 10 billion people expected on Earth by 2050. The proprietary software that repair advocates revile is what enables sensors and computers on machines to log and transmit data on everything: moisture, nitrogen, levels in soil, the exact placement of seeds, fertilizer and pesticides, and ultimately, the size of the harvest. Having access to so much real-time data enables farmers and their computer-controlled machines to plant, spray, fertilize, and harvest at optimal times with little waste. All the farmers have to do is link their equipment to agronomic prescriptions beamed to them over the Internet. This is farming's version of big data, and the potential is staggering, enthusiasts say. The efficiency gains of recent decades have increased productivity an estimated 1.4% per year for the past 70 years. Deere and other agricultural technology companies are betting that what the industry calls precision agriculture can dramatically expand output. There's also a more obvious motive for protecting proprietary software: money. Historically, the healthy profit margins of the parts and services units have helped smooth out earnings when the demand for machines is down. For Deere and its dealerships, according to company filings, parts and services are 3 to 6 times more profitable than sales of original equipment. Farmers need to keep aging equipment running. That helped increase annual parts sales by 22% to $6.7 billion from 2013 to 2019. While Deere's total agricultural equipment sales plunged 19% to $23.7 billion. If a right-to-repair law pries open the parts and services market to competition, Deere's Cyclical Balancing Act could falter. Sanchez denies that the company is fighting to protect a parts and services monopoly. On the repair side, I say we're all in, he says. There's a significant number of tools that exist in the market and are available to any farmer without having to go through the dealer. That's news to Jeremy Davis, one of a small number of independent equipment mechanics in central Nebraska. At least half the repairs he sees involve code faults triggered by emission control systems. The faults render vehicles inoperable, a bit like a mouse incapacitating an elephant. Davis can replace the exhaust filters and particulate traps that throw off a tractor's codes, but dealerships won't provide the software to restart the machine, and he or the owner hauls it in or pays for a mechanic to make a house call. Davis scoffs at another industry argument against sharing repair software with farmers and independent mechanics, that they'll abuse it to disable emission control systems. The incentive works the other way around, he says. Many farmers who own machines with warranties that are about to expire will delete the emission system software to avoid costly future repairs. If right-to-repair legislation leads to more independent mechanics being able to resolve faults quickly and easily, owners would have less motivation to disable emission controls, Davis says. The way it is now, it is unfair to owners, and it's unfair to me. To Kenny, the notion that farmers can't work on their own tractors is an affront to the rugged individualism that built America. Raised on a central Nebraska farm, he was always passionate about machines. When he was 12, he and his friend rebuilt the transmission of his dad's 1953 Studebaker pickup. Today, he makes his living installing tractor software for a Fromm Data company and tuning and tweaking trucks and tractors. His calling, however, is the right to repair. He spent the past 4 years turning many conservative farmers against corporate incarnation of motherhood and apple pie. For Nebraska farmers, horror stories about tractors bricking or shutting down from a computer fault are all too common. A Deere spokesperson says help is never more than a finger tap away, referring to the communications equipment on modern farm implements. But getting a machine running again isn't always quick. Blue Blauhorn of Palmer, Nebraska, lost half a day of harvesting corn while waiting for mechanics to drive 65 miles to his farm to reset the software on his 2017 Case 1H combine. Its emission control system would repeatedly ice up on cold nights and in the morning throw a fault code that prevented it from starting. In 2018, Blauhorn was racing to bring in the harvest before an approaching rainstorm when the system wouldn't turn over. He says a five-hour wait for someone to show up and do a half-hour software fix contributed to a loss of at least 15% of the crop. Since then, he doesn't take chances. We just let the machine run all night, he says. Andrew McCargue's tractor went down for a week during planting season while he waited for technicians to solve a problem. McCargue of Chapman, Nebraska, paid $300,000 for the new machine in 2014, and over the next few years, he sank almost $8,000 into clearing fault codes. He finally mothballed it in favor of a 2010 model without the latest software and emission control systems. The used tractor cost him an additional $160,000. The whole disconnect is about who really owns it, says McCargue. If it's mine, I should be able to fix it myself. As things stand, Deere has the technical ability to remotely shut down a farmer's machine anytime if, say, the farmer missed a lease payment or tuned a tractor software to goose its horsepower, a common hack available through gray market providers. A Deere spokesman says many manufacturers can remotely control vehicles they sell, but Deere has never activated this capability in the U.S. Who really owns the tractor? If it's mine, I should be able to fix it. Kenny worries that equipment makers' remote control over vehicle software makes farmers and the food supply vulnerable to sabotage. His concerns are real. In 2016, the FBI issued a warning that U.S. agriculture is increasingly vulnerable to cyber attacks as farmers become more reliant on digitized data. What if foreign adversary backs hacks? What if a foreign adversary hacks Deere and shuts down thousands of tractors in the field? What if the internet or the electric grid is knocked out by a cyber attack or a geomagnetic storm? Unable to restart their machines without dealer software, farmers may have no recourse but to watch as food production crawls to a halt. Before closing time at Husker Harvest Days, Bruce Riker, Chief of Government Relations for the Nebraska Farm Bureau, sits down to talk. The Bureau's delegates have twice voted almost unanimously in favor of the right to repair, yet Riker killed the proposal. Despite bipartisan support in Nebraska legislature, some powerful lawmakers didn't want to take on Deere and the equipment lobby, telling suicides to settle their differences without legislation. A lot of times, I believe the best solution isn't legislative or regulatory. It's parties working things out, Riker says. But to Kenny and his collaborators, Riker's position is pure capitulation. Why would we send that signal to the companies that you don't need to worry about us, that we're not going to take any action that threatens your revenue, says Tom Schwartz, a Nebraska Farm Bureau leader. Right to repair advocates got some good news in July when President Joe Biden signed an executive order that curbs unfair, anti-competitive restrictions on third-party repair or self-repair of items, such as restrictions imposed by powerful manufacturers that prevent farmers from repairing their own equipment. The measure also applies to technology companies. As this article went to press, the Federal Trade Commission was considering how to enact such a rule. Kenny, however, is not the type to wait patiently. Recently, prior to President Biden's action, he emailed Guy Gordon Byrne of the Repair Association a photo of a 2017 Deere combine that he proudly tuned up for a friend with an extra 50 horsepower using gray market software. She wasn't impressed. Such tweaking could fall outside copyright law and amount to theft of services, she warned him. Kenny wasn't buying it. He wrote back, Gay, thanks, but why was it okay years ago to pull the diesel engine fuel pump off, screw the horsepower up, put it back on, run it with no consequences of theft? Just because these engines are now electronic versus mechanical, we've lost our rights to repair and modify? Back in my day, we truly believed hot rodding is a national birthright. Dirt can't hide. How a stealth team of chemists discovered a mix of molecules that changed laundry forever. For many of us, Tide is the most squeaky clean of home helpers. In 2018, Americans bought $1.7 billion worth of Tide products, more than all other detergents, including Purex, Persil, Gain, and Arm & Hammer, combined. This year, 4,000 Americans surveyed by the global market research firm Ipsos for the annual Reader's Digest Most Trusted Brand Survey selected the super cleaner as the most trusted brand in the home and family products corner. And I think I've already read this article. For some reason, I didn't cross it off. My apologies. So with that mistake, let's go ahead and look at some true stories. In 100 words, old enough to know better, I was standing in line in a grocery checkout line wearing the T-shirt my wife had given me for my recent birthday. It read, I am the square root of 4,900 years old. The lady in line ahead of me turned around and looked at it and said, I have no idea what that means. The young man next to the register explained, Ma'am, that means he is 700 years old, which obviously was not the case. Keeping the change. It was November 21st, my parents' wedding anniversary, but we had just buried my father, so I was feeling down as I ran into the bank to cash a check. The teller counted my change. Wow, he said, this penny is from 1951. That was the year my parents married. I looked and saw it was a wheat penny. My sweet dad was a coin collector. He had jars full of wheat pennies. Had the teller not commented, I would have spent that penny without a second thought. But now I forever cherish my penny from heaven. Melissa Kramer. Mind the gaps. While we drove through rural South Carolina to visit family for Thanksgiving, our book-the-night friend was full of questions. He studied the paths landscape with a worried look. How's the economy down here? I see some areas build up, but there are these long gaps between them. My brother, a southern gentleman, thought for a moment and then answered, Down here, we call those gaps farms. How to work out your worries by writing. Spending just a few minutes jotting down your feelings is good for your health, both mental and physical. After his father was rushed to the hospital with gastrointestinal bleeding, 40-year-old Yanantha Jusave began to panic. So he did the one thing he knew would calm himself. He wrote, I'm so scared, he started. I don't know what I'll do if I lose my dad. Over the next few weeks, Jusave filled several notebooks writing about his worry as well as his happy memories with his dad. The jokes they'd shared, the basketball games they'd watched, and the time they put up hurricane shutters together, then cooled down with ice cream. Sometimes Jusave cried as he wrote. Often he laughed. Writing me allowed to face my fears, says Jusave, who teaches entrepreneurship at a college in Miami. My pen was a porter to process the pain. He's in good company. An extensive body of research shows the benefits of writing about a traumatic experience or difficult situation in a manner that psychologists refer to as expressive writing. People who do this, recording their deepest thoughts and feelings, often show improved mental and physical health, says James Pennebaker, Ph.D., a psychology professor at the University of Texas, Austin. Pennebaker pioneered the scientific study of expressive writing as a coping mechanism to deal with trauma in the 1980s. Expressing writing is a specific technique, and it's different from writing in a journal. The idea is to reflect honestly and thoughtfully on a particular trauma or challenge, and to do it in short sessions. Pennebaker says that hundreds of studies over several decades have looked at the potential benefits of expressive writing and found it to strengthen the immune system, including for people with illnesses such as cancer, PTSD, depression, asthma, and arthritis. Research also found that it can help reduce chronic pain and inflammation and improve mood, sleep, and memory. And it may help reduce symptoms of depression and PTSD and prevent colds and flus. Expressive writing works because it allows you to make meaning out of a painful experience, experts say. Recognizing something is bothering you is an important first step. Translating that experience into language forces you to organize your thoughts, and creating a narrative gives you a sense of control. But there are a few caveats. Expressive writing isn't a magical panacea. It shouldn't be used as a replacement for other treatments, and people coping with severe trauma or depression may not find it useful to do on their own without therapy. Yet it can be a powerful coping tool for many, in large part because it helps combat the secrecy people often feel about a trauma, as well as their reluctance to face emotions. The more you avoid a problem, the more trouble you will have with it, because you create a loop of trepidation and apprehension and increase negative emotions, says Brian Marks, Ph.D., a professor of psychiatry at the Boston University School of Medicine. He uses an expressive writing protocol helped design called Written Exposure Therapy with TTSD patients at the VA Boston Healthcare System. Why write? Thinking or talking about an event can lead to ruminating, where you become lost in your emotions. But writing forces you to slow down, says Joshua Smith, Ph.D., distinguished professor of biobehavioral health and medicine at Pennsylvania State University, who studies expressive writing. The mere act of labeling a feeling, of putting words to an emotion, can dampen the neural activity in the threat area of the brain, says Annette Stratton, Ph.D., distinguished professor and chair of the Department of Psychology at UCLA. Stan's research suggests that expressive writing could lead to lower depressive symptoms, greater positive mood, and enhanced appreciation for life. Writing can increase someone's acceptance of their experience, and acceptance is calming, she says. What if you don't consider yourself a writer? And that's in parentheses. Don't worry about spelling or grammar, and don't share your writing with anyone, but do dig deep into your thoughts and feelings. The goal of the exercise is to find meaning in an unsettling event. Yanatha Dosove returned to expressive writing about 15 years ago after the breakup of what he was an unhealthy relationship. He wrote to understand why it made him feel vulnerable and sometimes physically ill. You can't keep things bottled up, he says. It will make you sick. The writing brought up an older trauma as well. When he was 9, he says he survived a shooting in a barbershop in Brooklyn. He had nightmares about it over the years, but tried not to focus on it. He started writing about it, then kept going. It helped. As he wrote, Dosovie asked himself how he felt about the traumas of his life and what they revealed. It was painful, he says. But when I acknowledged the pain, he says, I was able to see the courage I didn't know I had. He thinks of his expressive writing as a captain's log, a recording of what happened and what he's learned. Sometimes he jots down just a few sentences, but he always starts with the tough stuff and then writes about how he's grown from the experience. Last year, he wrote in a notebook recording the stress of wrestling with germs, loss, misinformation, and the kids' homeschooling during the pandemic. But he's also written about what he has gained, more time with his family and perspective. My expressive writing gave me the courage to face my fears, Dosovie says, and I believe this has helped me discover the hope I needed to heal. How to practice excessive writing. Set aside time alone. Turn off your phone. Don't look at email or social media. Expressive writing doesn't work well with a lot of interruptions or distractions. Think short term. This is not journaling. Your aim is to write for 15 to 20 minutes daily for 3 days. Pick your medium. Using a pen and paper is nice because it slows you down to the pace of your own handwriting. But research shows that using a computer, even recording your voice, works too. The secret sauce is in the translation of thoughts and feelings into language, says Jocelyn Smythe, Ph.D., professor of biobehavioral health and medicine at Pennsylvania State University. Here's a topic. What is bothering you most? Is it something you can't talk about to anyone else? Expressive writing is perfect for this. Let sleeping dogs lie. Don't ruminate over something you weren't troubled by to begin with. Expressive writing is meant for the topics you still need to process. Make the connections. Explore your deepest thoughts and feelings. Pick a topic that is worrying you and explore why it happened, how it is related to other things in your life, and why it is bothering you now. Give yourself advice. What recommendations would you give to a friend with a similar issue? Don't limit yourself. If your original topic leads you to another one, that's fine. This is a meaning-making process, says Smythe. It might take some writing to get to what is really most essential. And it's okay if you feel bad at first. This is normal if you're focusing on a negative event. Don't share. Our writing changes when we know others are going to read it. Your goal is to be honest with yourself. Power through. If you get stuck, just keep going. Smythe suggests writing that last sentence, the last sentence you wrote, over and over again until you get unstuck. Move on. If you find it doesn't help after 3 days, try something else. Everyday Heroes, The Book Lady. It was Jennifer Williams' mother who got her hooked on books. A librarian, she read to her 3 children every day. Not until we went to kindergarten, Williams told VatavogDogwood.com, a local news site, until we went to college. When Williams, now 54, became an elementary school teacher and tutor in Danville, Virginia, she wanted her students to fall in love with reading, just as she had. But early on, she realized that some kids had limited access to books. It's very obvious to teachers of young children which kids are read to versus kids who are not, she says. It's obvious at the end of the day, the first day of school. To Williams, the solution was simple. Give kids books. In 2017, as part of a civic event called Engage Danville, she gave away 900 used children books over 3 days. Most people would be satisfied with that. Most. I was like, anybody could do that, she said. I wanted to do something that's going to stretch my faith, work ethic, my everything. So she raised the ante considerably by setting a new goal for herself. Give away 1 million books. Sounds like an unreachable number. But as William posted on Facebook, don't complain in the bleachers if you aren't willing to work hard on the field. So she got out to work, first by roping in friends to donate books or money to buy books. Before long, as news of William's project spread, strangers started leaving bundles of books on her front porch. As quickly as the books come in, Williams gives them to local schools, free of charge, and also supplies books to little free libraries around the city of 41,000, just over the North Carolina border. She also hosts a book club for inmates in the local jail. In the 4 years she's been doing this, the Book Lady, as William has come to be known, has given away more than 78,000 books. Only 922,000 more to go to reach her goal, and she's not slowing down. It's too important for kids with few options. Reading can take you anywhere, she told CNN. You can travel in time and space. If you can read, you can learn almost anything. And I'll put a personal note in here. There's an organization called Book Harvest here in Durham, North Carolina. And that organization, I was fortunate enough to be on the board of directors early in the thing when they were just a few of us working at it. That organization, over the last 8 years, has ended up giving away over 1 million books to kids. The director of this is a real dynamo, and she has gotten out and raised money, gotten donations of all kinds from all kinds of organizations. And the kids who are getting it are mostly underprivileged. They're given to schools with the things. The kids get 10 free books during the summer. They can take them home. They're theirs to keep. And what's happened is we found a lot of the older kids are reading to their siblings. So it's really become a chain kind of a thing. But it's really a great organization. So if you're anywhere near somewhere where you can donate books or contribute money to that kind of an organization, please do so. It's so important. And with that, let's switch over to Consumer Reports. Road Report. Your car repair handbook. If you have a critical maintenance or repair problem, who should you trust to do the work? CR explains when you try your hand at do-it-yourself and when to call a pro. With the new used car used car prices surging from a global shortage of microchips, more owners are paying to fix their cars and putting off a new car purchases. But for repairs and maintenance, there's the question of where to service your car. The dealership, a reputable independent shop, or do it yourself? If your car is under warranty, the answer is simple. Always take it to the dealership for a covered repair. For other situations, the answer depends on what service needs to be performed. Car owners who want to save money will want to strategize the best option for each job, says John Ebbison, Consumer Reports chief mechanic. CR Auto experts reviewed common maintenance and repair items, breaking down the best and most cost-efficient for each. For example, if you don't usually change your oil at home, we recommend going to the dealership. It's only marginally more expensive than a chain oil change shop, and we think it's worth it for the manufacturer recommended oil and the specific filter your model calls for. On the other hand, some repairs are so simple and the parts so inexpensive and easily available that you may find that it's more convenient and far cheaper to do them yourself. We also provide the cost for each repair and maintenance task for a Ford 150 and a Toyota Highlander, among the most popular models in our survey and in the marketplace. And excuse me while I turn a page here. Fix it yourself. The engineer filter. Description of job. Jill Trotta, Vice President of Industry and Sales for RepairPal, and a technician who has 30 years' experience and is certified for the National Institute of Automotive Service Excellence, says increased demand for automotive service work combined with part shortages and a years-long technician shortage can make for longer wait times at the repair shop. RepairPal is a CR partner. That makes doing the easy stuff yourself a no-brainer. Changing the engine air filter, which keeps harmful contaminants from entering the engine's combustion chamber, is simple. On most cars, it's easily accessible. Remove debris from the air cleaner box before installing the new filter so it doesn't clog the new filter or get into an engine. Cabin air filter. And by the way, the price on that is $21 for a Ford, $25 for the Highlander. In this case, the air filter, the cabin air filter, is $30 for the Ford 150 and $36 for the Toyota Highlander. Description of job. This filter keeps the air inside the car free of allergens and contaminants and uses access to the glove box. Some are simple to reach, others aren't. Instructions can often be found in the vehicle's owner manual. And also, YouTube instructional videos could be helpful. Windshield wiper blades, and that's anywhere from $28 to $50. On most cars, these can be replaced in minutes. Some auto parts will even do it for free after you buy the wipers. Place a soft cloth on the windshield in case the spring-loaded wiper arm snaps back into the glass during the replacement. Make sure the blades are affixed properly. If they fall off, the wiper arm can scratch or break the windshield glass and affect visibility. Some cars have a wiper arm service position that makes it easier to install new wiper blades. Headlight replacement. Headlight bulbs can burn out after a few years. Many older type bulbs are easy to replace, but if your car has the newer LED lights, get them installed by a pro, because the entire assembly often needs to be replaced. Go to an independent shop for these things. Suspension, shocks, or struts. Anywhere from $628 to $658. Description of the problem. Suspension parts are regular wear items. If in poor condition, could cause unsafe braking and handling. How long shocks and struts last depend on primarily on the road surfaces you usually drive on. Rougher roads obviously are harder on these parts. Their replacement is fairly straightforward, but make sure you ask the shop for the highest quality parts to ensure a good, long-lasting ride. Even name-brand aftermarket shops often come in different grades, so ask for details about the quality and the price. Head gasket. Whoa, those are expensive, anywhere from $1,500 to $2,000. A head gasket creates a seal between your car's engine block and its cylinder head. Over time, the gasket can start to leak, which can get progressively worse and lead to overheating and engine damage. For most head gaskets, replacing can be a labor-intensive, but the job is usually relatively simple, so it makes sense to choose an independent shop, which typically charges a lower rate for labor than dealerships charge. Loyalty to one shop is most often rewarded for technicians who know your particular vehicle and with an honest appraisal of what's needed, says Ebbetson. A good shop that you developed a rapport with will be able to tell you whether they can handle a job or should take it to the dealership or a specialist. Brake pads, $167 to $228. Description of problem. This fix is the most frequent on the list of common repairs, according to RepairPal data. Brake pads, a regular wear item like tires and windshield wiper blades, need to replace ever so often. The number of miles between replace it depends on the model, road conditions, and how you drive the vehicle. The repair is usually pretty standard from a vehicle to vehicle, so we recommend an independent shop. To keep costs down, it will probably use lowest cost aftermarket parts, so it's up to you to ask for the best ones possible, Ibbotson says. Good aftermarket parts will still be less expensive than factory parts. Brake rotors should usually be replaced to ensure a smooth operation. The technician can also inspect the condition of related parts, such as wheel bearings and suspension components, that can affect braking, safety, and performance. How to find a high-quality repair shop? Well, first of all, let's do the spark plugs and the alternator replacement. Description of the problem. Spark plugs ignite the fuel-air mixture in your engine's combustion chambers, which creates power to move the car. When they get dirty or worn out as miles accrue, it can affect fuel economy, drivability, and even emissions. Replacing spark plugs on some engines is easier than on others. A Toyota four-cylinder engine spark plugs are accessible from the top of the engine, whereas the spark plugs on a Subaru's flat four are in a tight spot on the side of the engine. Either way, independent shops work on a variety of cars and will have the tools and expertise to replace spark plugs and do other tune-up tasks. Alternator replacement. The alternator is a belt-driven part that converts engine power into electricity for charging the battery and powering the vehicle's many onboard electronic components. Replacing one is another common repair that varies in complexity depending on the vehicle, make, and model. Some alternators are easily accessible, others not so much. But in general, disassembly of major components isn't required to get to an alternator, so an independent shop is a good choice. Gas-electric hybrids and even mild hybrids, on the other hand, won't have a traditional alternator, and they might need attention at the dealership if there's a problem. How to find a high-quality repair shop? Here are some basics for identifying a good shop. Ask for recommendations. Check with friends, especially if you know someone with a car that's similar to yours. Find specialty shops. Garages that focus on a particular car brand are more likely to have the latest training and equipment for it. Check for certification. High-quality mechanic and shop should be certified by the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence. Look for online reviews. Search RepairPal and Yelp for customer reviews. Check Facebook groups for recommendations in your area. Give the shop a trial run. Try a new shop with a smaller repair or maintenance work, such as an oil and filter change. If the mechanics do good work and communicate well, you can take your vehicle back for more complicated repairs. And ask about warranties. Inquire about a shop's guarantee for common repairs. It should be willing to stand behind its work. Now here's when you should go to a dealership. Advanced safety system alignment. Description of the problem. Many newers are equipped with active driver assistance systems that CR recommends having in all new vehicles. Features such as automatic energy braking, blind spot warning, and adaptive cruise control consist of a series of cameras and or sensors feeding information to a computer that works with the vehicle control systems to increase safety. Occasionally, whether because of a fender bender or a windshield replacement or software problem, these systems can need repair and special alignment so that the cameras and sensors operate with precision. The dealership is best equipped to repair this complex hardware and software because it will have the most up-to-date tools. Independent shops can do some of this work, but Ibbotson says the dealership's expertise in its own car justifies the higher cost of labor for these repairs. Infotainment glitches. CR members complain frequently in our auto surveys about infotainment reliability problems, frozen screens, touchscreen buttons that don't respond readily, or systems that go dark and need reboots, among other problems. Software bugs are more common than you might think. He adds that only factory-backed dealerships will have the right computer equipment and parts available for proper diagnosis and software updates, so it's not a good idea to go to an independent shop. Plus, the dealership will always have the latest information from the manufacturer. The owner's manual might tell you how to reboot the infotainment system yourself, and that might fix a software-related problem. Airbag and seat belt maintenance repair. But problems can also arise with airbags, such as the ongoing spate of Takata airbag recalls over the past several years, or a blinking airbag light can indicate a potential malfunction. Seatbelt can also develop problems. They contain specialized mechanisms, such as pre-tensioners, that have turned some restraint systems into high-tech feats of engineering. And child car seats are often secured in the back seat by belts that need to be in tip-top shape. If you have an airbag or seatbelt problem, the dealer is best equipped to fix it and ensure proper operation. Timing belt replacement. I've been there, and that ain't fun. A timing belt or chain is a vital part that keeps the engine operating smoothly. Timing belts are replaced proactively at specific intervals, often at 100,000 miles. It's a complicated procedure, often requiring partial engine disassembly. Skipping this service can lead to major engine damage, and I will testify to that. And if some key parts, such as idler pulleys, belt tensioners, or even water pump, aren't replaced at the same time, it could lead to failure and replace maybe expensive ones down the road. If you already deal with an independent shop you trust, it might be able to handle this job. But Ibbotson says dealerships are more likely to know which parts associated with the timing belt or chain for your model should be replaced at the same time to avoid problems in the future. What about electric vehicle repair and maintenance? CR has found that generally electric vehicles cost less to maintain than their gasoline-powered counterparts because they contain fewer moving parts. For example, EVs have no timing belt or spark plugs to contend with. But they do have normal wear items such as tires, brakes, windshield wipers, and suspension parts that degrade as time and mileage pile up. Most of these items are similar to those found in gas-powered cars, and they can be worked on in independent repair shops. But some EV-specific maintenance items and repairs require specialized knowledge and equipment, and only EV technicians should tackle them. Batteries. EV battery packs, the large array of cells that power the car's motor, usually last a long time, but they do degrade over time and can be replaced at a shop that specializes in battery pack replacement or at the dealership. Software issues. As with gasoline-powered car, you should take your EV to a dealership if there are problems with infotainment or other in-car displays. Charging problems. The charging port and information displays can malfunction, making it impossible to fuel the car. This should be addressed by the dealership. And here's something that's actually very expensive, and you need to take special care of it. How to replace your car's key fob. Replacing a lost or broken key fob can be a pricey proposition. Most cars today come with advanced, feature-laden fobs that require programming and laser cutting, and can cost as much as $450 or more to replace. If your fob isn't working, fret to see if all it needs is a new battery, which you can easily change on your own. To replace a fob for a car that was built within the past 5 years, chances are you'll have to go directly to a new car dealership that has the expensive equipment required to program the key, says John Ibbotson, CR's chief mechanic. But if you have an older car, you might be able to save money on a new fob by taking one of the approaches described below. Always check your car's basic warranty or roadside assistance coverage and your insurance to see if they will cover the cost of replacing lost or damaged keys. Order a genuine fob online. You can find genuine replacement fobs at some auto parts websites and at online retailers including Amazon, Car and Truck Remotes, and Walmart. We found a genuine Hyundai fob for a 2017 Anna Q for $93 with shipping from Car and Truck Remotes, which is $208 less than what a Hyundai dealer quoted us. Thumb fobs are easy to program, but this one requires the services of a dealer or a locksmith. A local Hyundai dealer quoted $130 for programming, plus $85 for a laser-cut backup key, bringing the total cost to $308. $208 less than buying the fob directly from the dealer, however. Buy an aftermarket fob online. Aftermarket fobs can cost much less than those made by an automaker and are available at many of the same online retailers that sell genuine replacement fobs. Key findings. We searched for a 7-button alternative aftermarket fob for a 2008 Chrysler Town & Country minivan through Amazon and found one for less than $15. Prices range from $14 to $27. Chrysler owners with two working fobs can program a third themselves. Otherwise, a dealer might charge $20 to $100 to program a new one. Savings are $216 less than purchasing and having a programming done at a dealer. Call a locksmith. A mobile locksmith is another option that can potentially save time and money. I can usually come in at 30 to 50% less than the dealer, says Jonathan Janeski, a mobile locksmith in Connecticut, but he says he can't handle fobs for certain European brands because he doesn't have the programming gear required. Janeski went to CR's Auto Test Center to make a spare key fob for a 2009 Honda Pilot. He programmed an aftermarket fob he provided and cut a new key in about 15 minutes for $125. $95 less in purchasing and programming at a Honda dealer. Go to a national chain. If you prefer going to a store rather than have a locksmith come to your house, try a national chain such as Ace Hardware or Batteries Plus that provide key fob replacement and programming. A local Batteries Plus retailer quoted us a price to replace a 2009 Honda Pilot fob that landed in between the mobile locksmith and the Honda dealer. The aftermarket model it offered cost $75 plus $70 for programming and key cutting for a total of $145. $75 less than the dealer, $20 more than the mobile locksmith. And for Consumer Reports, Building a Better Work Together. Stopping furniture tip-overs. Every 60 minutes, a child is treated in an emergency room for injuries from furniture that tipped over onto them. Many manufacturers say that families should anchor their furniture, but that's not always a viable solution. In fact, two-thirds of Americans don't do that, according to a new nationally representative CR survey. Reasons include uncertainty about how to find a wall studs and other aspects of installation, and many just say their furniture already seems stable. But the onus to make these products safe should not be on the consumer. CR tests show that it's possible to design furniture that resists tipping across a range of prices. So we're urging Congress to pass the Stop Tip Over Unstable Risky Dressers on Youth Sturdy Act, which cleared the House in June and awaits a Senate vote. If it passes, the Consumer Product Safety Commission will have to mandate more rigorous testing. Making cars more fuel efficient. What's at stake? In August, President Joe Biden committed to stronger auto pollution standards using an executive order that aims to reduce greenhouse gas emissions from new passenger vehicle sales by more than 60% by 2030 compared with vehicles sold in 2020. A nationally representative survey, a summer 2020 survey of 3,879 U.S. adults found that 9 in 10 agree automakers should continue to improve fuel economy for all vehicle types. But CR advocates feel the imposal by the Environmental Protection Agency to implement Biden's order doesn't go far enough, even though it represents a big improvement over the rollback standards of the previous administration. Unfortunately, the proposal includes loopholes for automakers that make it weaker than it looks on paper. And CR's analysis shows that it would deliver only 75% of the benefits of the fuel efficiency standards established and agreed on by the auto industry in 2012. CR advocates are trying to strengthen the new rules before they're finalized later this year. In particular, we're encouraging the Biden administration to adopt a better plan for the EPA, included in the same proposal. This alternate number 2 would eliminate some of the loopholes, strengthen the efficiency standards, save consumers up to $2,000 over the life of the average new vehicle, and put us on track to meet the goals the president has committed to. And how about some letters to the editor? In September 2020, investigation of danger on wheels revealed that risky tires may still be used on recreation vehicles on U.S. roads today and gave important precautions RT drivers need to stay safe. I just read your article on tire safety. While it's frightening how long the manufacturer got away with using these faulty tires, the problem with trailer camper tires is much deeper. We have a camper that is only 2 years old and had to replace all the tires before we took our first delayed trip. We read an alarming number of stories on a users group for the specific model of camper about tires that blew out for no apparent reason. Two campers on the forum and had the spare tire go flat while still in the bracket on the back bumper. If manufacturers continue to put cheaply made dangerous tires on every new rig, more folks are going to get hit. Your article is truly the tip of the iceberg regarding recreational vehicles and safety. With the high demand for RVs continuing due to the pandemic and interest in glamping, they represent a safety concern. Various RVing magazines documenting monthly numerous safety-related recalls from manufacturers throughout the RV industry. Some of these defects are significant and can easily cause crashes or injuries. I currently own a 2018 Class C motorhome that was purchased new. Within the first 2 months of ownership, we had a significant mechanical failure directly related to poor design that could have been disastrous. I believe CR should continue to look into the safety and quality concerns within the RV industry because RV ownership has increased. Editor's note, just like cars, trucks, and SUVs, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration routinely posts recall notices for RVs and tires at nhtsa.gov/recalls. We reckon that all RV owners periodically check for recalls. Have your VIN and build date handy when you check. Your 9 tips for safer RV travel were good, but you should have added a 10th. Stay well back from the vehicle you're following. It's easy and cost-free and improves safety with a heavy vehicle that's hard to maneuver and stop. Regarding your article, the best new ways to work out at home. My wife and I depend on Consumer Reports for product insights and ratings. When I saw that the cover of this issue promoted an article on exercise equipment, I raced to read it for ways we might improve our home gym. While readers surely appreciate your thoughts on how to create an online aerobic training experience and your trustworthy treadmill ratings, the lack of attention to resistance training equipment disappointed us. Resistance training becomes increasingly important as one ages, and there seems to be quite a range of options from home resistance training equipment. Learning CR's scientific take on various options would be very helpful. Editor's note, you're absolutely right that strength training is important. The Physical Activity Guidelines for Americans recommend at least 2 muscle-strengthening workouts weekly. The good news, we now have ratings for adjustable dumbbells, a popular option that works well for small spaces. In September's Build Your Own Peloton system, both of the bikes you recommended lack an essential feature, calibrated resistance, usually a digital readout. Both models appear to use an uncalibrated knob to change the resistance without a way to determine the actual resistance selected. It's all guesswork based on how you happen to feel that day. Editor's note, the bikes we selected performed very well overall, although didn't replicate all Peloton features. Knowing the exact resistance level can certainly be helpful if you want to keep track of your progress. If that's a feature you want, we suggest the SWIN IC4, which shows the resistance level as well as numeric values of speed, distance, time, and an estimate of calories burned. Rather than spend $10 or $15 or up to $49 a month on a class subscription, I get all the motivation I need to do daily workouts on my basement exercise machines by borrowing free audiobooks from my public library. Cost is $0 a month. I also avoid any fees for automatic stat tracking by exercising my hand and finger muscles to write down numbers using the old dime paper and pencil. Smart ways to declutter. September 20, 2021's article, How to Finally Get Rid of Stuff, was filled with useful information. Two more points that I think are worth mentioning here. First, in New York City, there is a useful resource called Material for the Arts, MFTA.org. MFTA will accept a wide range of items that are often not wanted by other rare use groups and will find a home for the items with artists and educators. MFTA could be a model for other areas. Second, the article says donating can also earn you a charitable tax deduction. This is true, but in my experience, the non-cash in-kind portion of tax code is mostly useless unless there's one third-party documentation of the value of the donated item, which usually applies to or is available only for high-end items. The donor estimates the value of the item, and this deduction is capped at a fairly low number. And even then, this would benefit only people who itemize their taxes. What better WFH setup? It's not necessary to tether yourself to a fixed location to get the benefits of a spacious display screen. You can get a large external monitor and HDMI cable that plug easily into your laptop. The external monitor can serve as an extension of rather than a replacement for your laptop screen. The convenience of having both screens open is considerable. You get the best of both worlds, a portable computer plus a large display. This also works for tablets. I happen to have an iPad, and I often watch movies sitting in a chair in front of my computer monitor plugged into my iPad. Using an external monitor is a great way to boost not only display size, but also the ergonomics of working on a laptop. In this issue, we recommended ways to automize your home office, including a top-rated monitor, a keyboard, a mouse, and headphones, to improve both your posture and your productivity. Your September 2021 article, The Quest for Safer Chicken, was extremely informative. The tips for the safe handling of meat are crucial to avoid disease. Handling chicken as tossed away is not new. I remember many a Thanksgiving with my mother timing to the minute how long to defrost the bird and cleaning literally everything she could with a bleach after spray after. Nothing you used on a turkey was allowed to touch anything else, and all the dishes, utensils were washed thoroughly. None of us ever became ill from food poisoning, and I certainly learned that from my mom. Car Talk. Your article on preventing car thefts, How to Prevent Car Thefts in September 2021, did mention one feature my 2000 Volkswagen has to make it less likely to be stolen, a 6-speed manual transmission. A smart thief may be able to manipulate the keyless entry, but I'd be willing to bet that many thieves wouldn't know how to depress the clutch to make the push-button start work, or how to drive a standard shift. I bought a manual because that's what I love to drive, but the reduced likelihood of being stolen is a very nice bonus. What we're testing in our labs. Wi-Fi routers. They tested 56 models, and they tested for speed, throughput from 85 to 55 feet away, and how well the router protects your privacy and more. Scores were median with 65, range with 32 to 90. Best individual router, the Synergy Route 2600 at $200, got a 90. Nightgear Nighthawk at AX1800, $210, got an 82. And that is the one for the mesh. That's where you get more than one unit. Bargained by individual, Lindsay Maxsystem AC1750 for $90, got a 77. Cordless drills. We tested 47 models. We test for how powerful the drill is and how quickly it can drive in screws and drill holes, how long it will run on a single charge, and how noisy it is and more. The median was 62. The range was 33 to 86. And the first one that got an 86 was the Milwaukee Heavy-Duty Hero, the Milwaukee 280522, 18 volts brushless motor for $330, got an 86. Good value for general works. The DeWalt DCD701, 12-volt brushless model, $150, got a 74. An easy do-it-yourself pick. The Works 20 volts, quarter-inch fixed-hex brushed motor at $80, got a 62. I need a cordless drill. Should I get a brushless or a brushed motor bottle? If you need a heavy-duty drill, going with a brushless bottle is a good bet because it's more powerful and energy efficient than a brushed motor bottle, says CR drill tester Chris Reagan. Instead of using a small metal contacts called brushes to keep the drill shaft spinning the way brushed motor does, brushless models use an electronic circuit board and a sensor. This allows you to automatically adjust the speed, torque, and power supply to match the task at hand. But brushless drills are also more expensive, so you may have only occasional light-duty tasks to accomplish. You may be fine with a less expensive brush model, such as the Works, which I listed above. And winter snow tires. We don't need those quite yet. 32 models. Braking performance on dry, wet, and icy roads, traction in snowy conditions, resistance to hydroplaning. About the scores. The median score was 67. The range was 54 to 78. Top picks for sports cars, the Vredestein Wintrack Pro for $180. Got a 78. Excellent for all cars, the Bridgestone Blizzak, $130, 73. And the best for trucks and SUVs, the Michelin Latitude X Ice X12 at $190, overall score of 72. Snack bars for kids. We tested 10 models. The nutrition benefits and drawbacks of each bar, checking on ingredients and the amount of fiber, sodium, and sugars, and more. The median score was 57. The range was 47 to 65. Organic and lower in sodium make good chocolate chip granola bars at 75 cents each. Got a 65. Fairly low in added sugars. This bar saves lives chocolate chip Dynamite Kids bar at $1.30 each. Got a 57. Lower in saturated fat. Kind Kids chewy chipped granola bars at 68 cents. Got a 57. And how about pillows? 18 models, how the pillow maintains its shape after extended use, how well it supports side and back sleepers, and how well it dissipates. Great for support for less. IKEA Luntrav High Pillow at $13. Got a 68. Super Back for 9 side sleepers. Beckham Luxury Linens Hotel Collection at $40. Got a 67. Bargain Buy Mainstay's Huge Bed Pillow at Walmart at $8. Got a 59 overall score. And the median was 67. The range was 54 to 90. And a couple of real quick jokes. Just heard my 50-year-old dad tell my 58-year-old aunt, "Don't tell Mom." So apparently that's a lifelong thing. Ugh, I have to get drunk every time I'm around my in-laws just so they know I'm not pregnant. And with that, we've just about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast on our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long until next time, and thanks so much for listening.